Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 12th of September, and I'm recording at 9:33 p.m., and that's British summer time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's have a quick look at the week here and see what's going on. And just very briefly, I think it's been a nervous week. For the most part, there are a lot of things to worry about, and more on that in a moment. Also, there are a lot of overbought conditions, and there are also a lot of good things going on, mainly in terms of the monetary policies that we actually see, which have been increased in some countries, while they're being reduced a little bit in the USA. But first, on the report here, Japan's had a pretty good week here, edging higher. It's been a disappointing performer this year, but that's only because last year's gains were so good, and I think we're still on track to see Japan move higher. And I am encouraged to see the Japanese yen weakening here a little bit against the US dollar. Mind you, the dollar's been pretty strong in the last month or so. But we're up to 107.36 for the dollar against the yen, 107.36 yen, that is. Also, China's quite steady, up again today with the Shanghai Composite Index up nearly 9/10 of a percentage point. Elsewhere, mixed picture overall. Indonesia remains reasonably firm here overall, so does Thailand. Taiwan and Malaysia have weakened in here recently and today. In Europe, there has been concern over the increasing sanctions that we're seeing, and also Putin's next move, but he's gone quiet here in the short term while those increased sanctions were being considered. Tactically, that might have been a fairly wise move on his part. I think Europe is also catching a little bit of a fallout from this potential black swan here in the form of the Scottish referendum, which comes up next week. And the polls are close. They've swung slightly back in favor of the no vote, but you'll recall. Sorry, I've got a little bit of a scratchy throat here. I don't know why. I feel fine, but can't get rid of it at the moment. Were Scotland to vote to pull out of the UK, I think it would be, I've described it as a black swan. It wasn't expected. It would have knock-on repercussions way beyond Scotland and the UK. It would weaken the USA's closest ally in most respects. It would certainly weaken the United Kingdom. I think it would cause a lot of problems for Scotland over at least the medium term. I think that the election would be good for the Scottish National Party, but not for Scotland. Basically, it would revive, I should say. I was going to say reawaken. They haven't gone to sleep, but it would revive efforts to become independent in several European countries. In other words, really from from Spain, Spain onwards, and that would be a little bit destabilizing here overall. I also think that the question is wrong, and probably Alex Salmond, who's cagey. Or clever, I should say, but I think fairly cynical, may have been responsible for that. But the question they're being asked to vote on, to give a yes or no answer to, is should Scotland be an independent country? Well, That sounds a little bit like a challenge, I would say, and the Scots may feel they need to rise to that if they do regard it as a challenge. And the unfortunate aspect is it comes at a time when Scotland has really a considerable amount of independence within the United Kingdom. And my own view, and it doesn't matter in this, but for what it's worth, because it's not going to be changed, is the question should be, should Scotland remain a member of the United Kingdom? Yes or no? I think the no vote would romp home quite comfortably, certainly more comfortably than it will with the question, should Scotland be an independent country? Okay, now, what are the stock? Well, let us just finish on the review here. In the Americas, Brazil has gone back to being weaker. It certainly has over the last week, at any rate, down another 2.4% here today. And that's because, well, the polls were indicating that there would be a change of government. And governance is everything, as we say at Fuller Tracy Money. That is not pleasing the international investors, or perhaps some of the local investors there as well. So that was weaker. Wall Street was a little bit weaker, on average, down 0.5% or so, on average across the indices. Bond yields, the U.S. 10-year. 2.6, just above 2.6. Now that's in, I think, a month or possibly less than a month. That's 30 points higher in there. It's not serious yet. I think the concerns really start to rise above 3, but it's moved up quickly. If we were to see it put on another 30 points to the upside at the same speed, I think people would worry a little bit more. that's interesting, and I have said in last week's big picture audio and during this week's audios that bond activity looked climactic, and in other words, yields were so low that they were very unlikely to go much lower and could easily move higher. Okay, currencies. Dollar strong in here, and a bit of a safe haven currency, and also people see the Fed completing the Ben Bernanke quantitative easing program. Some commentators think that the Fed will be forced to resume some form of QE rather than close it out forever. As it were. I think it's premature to arrive at that conclusion, but GDP growth, while it has been improving, it's not all that strong. And let's see elsewhere. Commodities generally weak, precious metals generally weak, silver off the lows in here today, though, actually closed with a very modest gain of 2 or 3 cents. It's still trading after hours, but got down to 1845. And is currently at 1862, up a fraction. And gold soft down to $1,229.5. They're quite oversold, but we need to see some clear upper dynamics. Okay. And energy prices again soft here. That's good news in many respects. Agricultural commodities soft for the most part. Coffee being a major exception. Okay, so what about this big picture long-term outlook here? Well, I think well, I described it as a nervous week, and I think we're entering a nervous phase in here. The Scottish uncertainty over the Scottish referendum is a major contributor to that. But you know, we've also had the ISIS or ISIL concern, and we know that there's going to be more military action, mostly by the USA, to combat that. We've got the Russian situation. Yes, that's gone a little bit quiet in here, but it's certainly not not over. There are concerns about other parts of the Middle East, Libya being one of them. So again, a little bit of concern about China's potential aggression, we've seen some aggression in the South China Sea. Maybe we see more of that. Also, a lot of markets are overbought and overstretched, and they have done very, very well thanks to quantitative easing. Now, what I've also said in all these audios, or most of them at any rate, that you don't buy the countries, you buy the stock markets, or you buy the equities that you like within the countries, and they've been doing better than the countries. And I've often commented on the fact that post-credit crisis recession, and that's what we've been faced with here, that it does take really a long time to recover. And I've repeated for years that due to the deleveraging that occurs on the part of corporations and households, which lower tax revenues to governments, that you create a very slow growth environment. And that deleveraging is a positive thing overall, but it does slow growth, it does increase unemployment, and it's difficult to get that unemployment rate back down again with quality jobs. We're seeing progress on that front, sort of 5.5 years on to with the U.S. and many other and most of the other economies. But you know, this can run for several more years as a slow growth environment overall. Now, that's not that bad for stock markets, as long as it doesn't become too deflationary. And I don't think that's a risk in the USA. It's certainly not a risk in Asia, in my opinion. I think even Japan has pulled out of that. But it is a risk in Europe, quite definitely. I'm talking about the European Union, I should say. It's a risk in the European Union. And not all of it, but particularly those southern European countries. Say a nervous environment, we could easily see that because valuations are high, and we're a little bit in some markets and a little bit overbought. Okay, but what are the markets that have the best valuations? Well, China would be at the top of my list, and I like that a whole lot, as you know. I would also I put Vietnam reasonably valued, an attractive market, frontier market. Japan, I think really quite attractive on a book value basis. I certainly like that. I like the Asia Pacific region generally, but I think my top three there, or if I take the Asia Pacific, my top three there would be India, China, Japan, and Vietnam as a fourth in there, but a spread of holdings throughout the Asian region for long-term investors looks like a sound policy here for me. Europe, I'm a little bit cautious, although the ECB will remain that's the European Central Bank, of course, will remain a very positive influence. It will create plenty of liquidity, and that will win out, I think, in the longer term. In the short to medium term, there are a lot of question marks over some of the deflationary pressures that we're seeing, which of course the ECB is fighting, and I think the Russian situation. The Russia situation, I should say. Vladimir Putin is a big worry, but I've talked plenty about that, so you know my views on that subject. Wall Street's a bit expensive. Companies are doing reasonably well in terms of their earnings. Mind you, they're managing those earnings quite cleverly, and they've also been buying a lot of their stock back, and that is, has helped earnings because it pulls those shares out of the earnings per share calculations. Stumbling blocks ahead, there's this big Alibaba float coming up later this month. What is it? I think it's around the 18th on this, I believe. But that's going to be approximately a $20-21 billion dollar affair. That money's got to come from somewhere, and maybe that's a factor in some of the bond weakness that we're seeing here. But the early forecasts on this say that it's going to be a very successful float, that a lot of big institutions are queuing up and want to be in on that. That's not surprising. You often get that type of environment in the latter stage of good bull market cycles. And there are a number of other companies that are queuing up behind Alibaba that will come to float if that's a successful successful flotation. And give it the benefit of the doubt at this stage, it probably will be. But this, again, this is going to suck more money out of the other stocks. And we do see, you look at all bull market cycles, and new issues are high towards the end of bull market cycles. Not surprisingly, because people know that they can get more for their shares than they're probably worth, or certainly get more than they would at most other times in the bull market cycle. So, you know, expect a little bit of turbulence in here. It would hardly be surprising if we saw some 10% corrections, including for the U.S. market. I've said that earlier this year, and we haven't seen it. We've seen a lot of consistent, persistent strength, and the main reason for that is, of course, we still have very positive monetary accommodation overall. Okay, on a very long-term basis, beyond the turbulence, and at some point in the next few years, quite possibly during changeovers from quantitative easing and other monetary accommodations, as we get back to some sort of normal environment, I wouldn't be at all surprised if we saw a cyclical bear market, but that may only be 20%, and it's hardly a disaster. So, for the most part, I favor staying mostly long good quality shares, but I would want to have good quality shares. I would not want to be holding on to shares that have streaked above their 200 rising 200-day moving averages. But well done you if you've had some of those. But when the obvious point that veteran subscribers will recall is that when something becomes very overextended relative to its rising 200-day moving average, it's probably going to underperform for a while, and it may well see a reaction back to that moving average, which may well be an additional buying opportunity. But watch out for overextended shares on the upside in this environment. Also, I would reduce leverage. I have done that personally, and today I took the profit on my leveraged China position. It was very, very small relative to my two major positions in China. And that J.P. Morgan China fund that I hold, and also I still hold that Atlantis China Healthcare, and that's you know, those have done well in here. But again, I took out that little leveraged position that I had been rolling forward, and I'll sit out for a while and reopen those if we see some decent reactions, let alone corrections. Okay, what about, well, I was going to say on the very long term, I think that once we get back this, what I think is going to be somewhat bumpy period for the next few years, but that's hardly a disaster. Shares with decent yields, autonomies, you could have I'll go a little farther than Charlie Munger. What did Charlie Munger say? He said you could have, was it Costco, Berkshire Hathaway, not in, and not, I think it was probably Berkshire Hathaway, then Costco, and then an Asian fund. Well, I'll widen that a little bit, and that was a tongue-in-cheek comment on his part. But I think a number of autonomies, these big successful multi-companies, which preferably do not look overextended, those are going to be very attractive over the longer term. And most of them are in the USA, or the USA has a higher percentage of them than any other country. I wouldn't want to be chasing the overextended ones. So, but as a long-term opportunity, if we get a good correction over the next year or so, or let alone a cyclical bear market of 20% plus. In the next few years, that would present a wonderful opportunity there. And the fuel drivers for this long-term secular bull market that I think we will see, and some say it has already begun, and that would they would be an accelerating rate of technological innovation, plus lower energy prices in real term, although I'd like to see more fracking and the development of new nuclear power programs to ensure that, and more solar. What I would also expect is, again, we get this rising global population and more GDP growth. If you get synchronized GDP growth, that leaves you more susceptible to cyclical bear markets when they overheat, but that's not a secular problem. That's a medium-term problem, and one that can be identified in advance, usually. Again, that rising population leading to a growing middle class. Due to GDP growth and the dominance of capitalist market systems, I should say. That's all very very positive. Okay, what about long-dated government bonds? Well, I think we're here on the edge of a bear market. In other words, a bond yield's going up, prices coming down. I would be very careful there. It hasn't set in yet, but we're ripe for it, and these transitions are often lengthy in going from bull to bear in that fixed interest sector. Not always, but remember, we've had a 32 years or more secular bull market in long-dated government bonds, and they can't go a whole lot lower, but they can go a whole lot higher if the global economy recovers, and I think that recovery may not really be clearly evident over the until a few more years down the road, but I see no reason why that won't happen given the secular bull theme factors that I've just recently mentioned. Currencies, we've got a very strong U.S. dollar here over. Overall, that's something that we forecast for a long time while it was in that ranging phase. Now, that will lose form or see a setback as and when the U.S. economy actually weakens. In other words, if the U.S. economy is not as strong this year or next as the Fed has been forecasting, and some people say that it won't be as strong as the Fed has been forecasting. And if it's looking a little slower than the growth that we're seeing in some other parts of the globe, then the dollar would soften again overall. So you'll want to bear that in mind and keep monitoring that on the price charts overall. I think Europe could do with a little bit lower euro, but it's less expensive than it was here at 1.2964 against the greenback. The UK government will be happy with that somewhat weaker sterling. Remember, that got up over 170 a couple of months ago, and it's currently at 1.6266 against the US dollar. Again, if we see Scotland pull out to the United Kingdom, then which I think is unlikely to happen, but it's uncomfortably close, I'll put it that way. But if the yes vote did win, then you would certainly see sterling weaken again quite sharply. And I think Asian currencies, well, I think the China looks to me to be recovering, and that could keep the currency reasonably strong. And I think the Indian rupee will stay reasonably steady here overall. What about commodities here? Let's deal with a tricky one: these precious metals. Currently, in the short term, they're oversold. Overextended on the charts, gold dropping down to the lower side of its range, silver probing through the lows of that range. So oversold, somewhat overextended, but they need very, very clear upward dynamics, and not just for one day, to signal an all clear and good recovery potential. So I'm running a few small losses on positions there, and silver and platinum, I'll hold those. You know, the definition of a losing trade is it then becomes a hedge, and so, you know, I've got a hedge long here in platinum and silver, and if we get a decent, really good rally or a decent rally, I'll chuck them out in all probability, because my biggest concern in recent months, and I haven't paid close enough attention to it, is that we have not seen enough, a long enough period of reaction and consolidation and support building relative to the long bullish phase that we had really from 2002 well into 2011. You don't want to get caught with big long positions in there. I think commodities are a little too cheap here overall, unless global GDP growth really is slowing down more sharply than most people, including myself, expect. But why are they cheap? For industrial commodities, it's strength of global economies and demand. For agricultural commodities, it's more a supply situation than anything else. And the supply situation is really quite bullish in terms of prices for most foods. There are exceptions. I mentioned coffee earlier on. California's had a rotten year due to its severity of its drought, but it saved most of the almond trees, and by transferring water from seasonal crops. So, but basically, overall, the food situation is not that bad. Meat prices are still really quite high, or I should put it this way: beef prices are really quite high. You know, you don't have to eat steak every day, do you? And you know, it's not a bad situation in terms of food supplies. Industrial metals. It's a slow recovery here. Just to wrap up here, I should say that as an indicator for stock markets, they are not suggesting that the bull market is over. Additionally, I would say that looking at the individual share indices for most stock markets, that those would not suggest that the bull market is over, but the bull market is ripe for a decent reaction and corrections, as I have mentioned before. And on that note, next, let me just say one more thing to announce, because I had an email on Tuesday, a very, very nice email following our Markets Now session at the East India Club, and we have finalized our dates, and we struggled to get the room here, which is interesting, but we did. Monday, October 6th, Monday, October 6th will be our next Markets Now meeting at the East India Club. They're a lot of fun, and we had some lively people, very experienced people, along last time, and I look forward to seeing a number of them again in future events, and also some new people, some new subscribers. They're, well, as I already said it, they're fun. And on that note, all the very best to all of you.